Since 1992, Genesis House has been helping real people heal from addiction on their private recovery campus in beautiful Palm Beach County, Florida. Their family-owned program is accredited by the Joint Commission and offers detox and dual diagnosis treatment in a comfortable and confidential setting. At Genesis House, they focus on treating the underlying causes of addiction. Their comprehensive approach includes psychiatric care, individual and small group therapy, trauma healing techniques, and holistic care including yoga, massage, and animal-assisted therapy. After treatment, their clients enjoy the lifelong support of a nationwide network of Genesis House alumni. Call Genesis House today at 1-800-737-0933 to speak with someone who understands. Visit them on the web at www.genesishouse.net. It's time to start your journey to a long and successful recovery.
Genesis House and the Friends in Recovery podcast are proud to bring you Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast. Join your hosts as they address the real issues of first responders' health and wellness, from physical and mental health to relationships and work-life balance. Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast, is available on Facebook, Podbean, iTunes, and YouTube, as well as iHeartRadio, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, here are your friends in recovery answering the call.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome to Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast. I am the pod father, Mike Miles, and I'm here alone today. Jersey Ed and I have decided to keep our podcast going as best we can. Summertime is always busy for everybody. So I'm doing the Answering the Call podcast solo, and Ed's doing the Friends in Recovery podcast solo. We're both still sober. We're both still helping a lot of people. And it's just the way it is. This is all new to me. Getting set up. I need Ed. I'm not a tech guy. He certainly is. What I'm good at is helping people. And that's why I'm here. This Answering the Call has been a great podcast. I love Friends in Recovery as well. That'll always be the podcast that we started on, nearest and dearest to my heart. But Answering the Call, I was a cop for 35 years, as most of you know. I was a correctional officer. I was an Army vet, 3 years in the United States Army Military Police Corps. And I got into helping people when I had my own problems. Back in 86, I went away and got some help. And I've never looked back. All I've done is maintain my own personal sobriety. I have a nice shirt on today. It's as sober as the new cool. And I believe that. I think it's actually the old cool. But we had a guest on a few weeks ago on Friends in Recovery, and she sent us some beautiful shirts. And I thought I'd wear it today. I think Ed's going to be wearing his as well. But I'm getting back to the helping people. You know, psychologically, physically, emotionally, being a police officer or a first responder, you know, it takes its toll. It's like a silent killer. You know, the average life expectancy of a white male is about 78.8, I believe. It used to be a little higher. The black male is much lower. It's 74, I believe. And, you know, it can be generics, it can be stress, it can be a lot of things. But the average life expectancy of a police officer, a white police officer, is, I think it was 68, a little over 68.2. You know, you're looking at a 10-year difference. And, you know, the reason being, you know, the internal stress, the incidents we see, the trauma that we have to be involved in because of our job, you know, and it's not necessarily always shoot them up, bang, bang, you know, gunshots, people shot, that does happen. But I'm just talking about bad motor vehicle accidents, domestic abuse, child abuse, drownings, you know, things I've seen, suicides. You know, it's kind of difficult to actually go to a suicide of a young couple. You know, they had a pact, Romeo and Juliet pact. They wrote letters to their loved ones, and they had a Maverick, Ford Maverick. They ran a hose from the exhaust. They duct taped it into the exhaust. It was a garden hose, and they put it in the vent window in the back seat of the two-door Maverick. And they bag of Doritos and a couple of cans of Coke, and they died. And they were 17 and 16. And this happened back in the 80s, early 80s. And I got to tell you, it's been with me ever since. We are 2021. I never forgot that. I never forgot what they looked like, what the car smelled like, the weather. You know, I can see it. I can see it as vivid as I can see my face on the screen here. That's called post-traumatic disorder. Post-traumatic, it's called. It is a disorder. The DSM-4 doesn't call it a disorder anymore. They just call it an occurrence. It can happen. You can have post-traumatic stress without, you know, being treated. Excuse me. But most first responders will see things like that. EMS, people drive an ambulance, first responders. These people see it all. They see broken bodies. They see death. They see carnage, destruction, mayhem. Firemen, same thing, you know, doctors, nurses, you know, these are the people you don't really get to know. It might be your neighbors. You say hi, you might have them over for a cookout. They're funny. They're just regular people, but they're a little different. They're a little, I don't want to say off in a bad way, but they're a little more serious. Maybe after a few beers, they lighten up a bit. But the reason being is most people in this line of work have a type A personality, and that type A personality looks for excitement. And I have a cat that just came in the room, and you can hear him meow, and he wants to be pet. And you know, that type A personality gravitates towards excitement, towards jobs like firemen, policemen, correctional officers. You know, correctional officers probably see more suicides than anybody because there's a lot of jailhouse hangings. They see a lot of violence, you know, they work crazy shifts. They work forced overtime. Can you imagine you're a banker, all right? You're a banker or an accountant, and your boss sticks his head in the door and says, hey, by the way, you got to stay another 8 hours tonight. And you have nothing to say about it. Nothing. You say, okay, that's what you say, okay. You can't resist, you know, even if you have plans, it doesn't matter. Your wife might have plans. Your significant other might have plans. Your children might have an event. You can't leave. That causes stress. See what I'm saying? It's not just about drama when you see some bad things. It's just about the job in general. You know, we get forced to work overtime when we don't want to work overtime. If there's a crisis, if they're shorthanded, forced overtime. Nurses and doctors also do the same. You know, these are the types of jobs that you really have to love to be in that atmosphere to be successful at them. You can't not like your job and do it for 25, 30, 35 years. You know what I'm saying? You just can't. You either got to like it or you don't. And if you don't like it, more than likely, you're not going to be doing it. You're not going to be doing this job for a long time. As far as I'm concerned, I'm very fortunate. I always liked what I did. I still do. Getting involved with being a therapist. I'm about to school in my 40s. Got my master's in social work. I got licenses to do alcohol, drug counseling, divorce counseling, children of separation and divorce, PTSD certificates. I have to keep up my licenses by getting college credits called CEUs. I have to get those every several months. I need 20 every year. And after every 2 years, I have to renew my license, so I need 40. I take all different courses, you know, things that I enjoy, things that are going to be beneficial and helpful to me and beneficial and helpful to my clients. So once you get involved in being a first responder, you know, it's not all gloom and doom either. There's a lot of rewards that go with this job, you know, when you help people and you see them, you know, progressing in life, doing better. You know, it's a good feeling. It really is. I see a lot of people. I have two clients today. I have one at 3 and one at 4. It's my day off from my normal hours. but these people needed to, this is the only day they could come. So I put my own personal agenda aside and I'll do this. And I've been doing this for a long time, over 21 years. I've been in private practice. If you're out there and you're suffering needlessly, when I say needlessly, I'm not saying that your malady might be, you know, a minute concern. I don't mean it that way. I mean, you're suffering needlessly because there is help. There are people like myself, like Dr. Friedman, Barry Friedman, Hayden Duggan, you know, Ed Ciaccio, Ed and I just got a gentleman into Genesis House yesterday down in Florida. He's got a heroin alcohol problem. He's 31 years old. We collaboratively worked together to get this young man on a flight. And he missed his plane this morning, so he's going to be heading out a little bit later, but he's heading out. There's a small reward in that. There's no beneficial reward, which is irrelevant when you're trying to help someone. Yesterday, I helped another gentleman where I don't get paid to help. I brought him some clothing, some food, and I'll check on him again today. You know, being a first responder, being involved in helping people, you know, it's especially now currently, it's a very dangerous profession to go in to begin with. But right now, there's not a lot of support. There's a lot of negativity. I guess there is support, but the negativity has grown in leaps and bounds. You know, the media will show a cop acting inappropriate or a correctional officer acting inappropriate. I've seen that on the news. Sometimes they cover the good stuff, the heroic stuff. It was a young police officer just drowned in Worcester, Massachusetts, saving a young boy's life. Unfortunately, the young boy drowned too. But when the cop got to the scene and there was somebody drowning, I mean, he couldn't pass it on to someone else. He couldn't say, oh, we got to wait for a boat. He jumped into this lake and he swam out, and him and the victim both drowned. He had a family. Do you know that his family is fighting with the state of Massachusetts now, the state government, so they can get his pension? Because drowning is not considered a on-duty death. Now think of that. He was on duty. He went in the water to save someone's life. He wasn't at a beach having a party, having hamburgers. He was out doing his job. And as a result of doing his job, he ends up dead, and his family has no recourse. So they got to fight to get his pension. And when I hear that, it infuriates me. It just really infuriates me. You know, I'm sure it'll work out. You know, it better work out. I can't understand how it won't. But how do we get to a place in 2021 where we're even discussing this? You know, all these presidents of the police unions and all these high rollers with their expensive watch and cars, and you know that they're always wheeling and dealing. How do they let this slip through the cracks? It's beyond me. Shame on you. Shame on you if you're involved with helping union members and you let something like this slip through the cracks. Are you kidding me? I'm glad it's not my family, because I'll tell you, I'd have a head full of steam. I wouldn't let this go. That's how it is. I looked down to Maryland back when there was Ferguson, Missouri. Michael Brown was shot by Officer Wilson. I remember the names because it's important to me. During the Obama administration, Officer Wilson never wore a uniform again, and all he was doing was his job. But the media had a field day with him. They made him out to be like a murderer. Killed poor Mike Brown. Poor Mike Brown. You know, just a big slob of a kid, you know, just a real big, like a big baby they wanted, the media wanted to make him out to be, until they found other videos of him beating up an Asian store owner, beating up a black alcoholic wino in an alley somewhere. They had video of him. His friends had videoed this. Somehow it got to the media. The media didn't show it. but it got out there, you know? That's what I'm saying, that the media plays a very important part. What people see, they believe. What people hear, they believe, you know? If it suits them, especially if it suits them, you know? But I think it's important going forward. If you're wearing a badge, a patch on your sleeve, and you're out there to help people, and you're doing an 8-hour, 12-hour, 16-hour shifts, you know, and you're making minimum money, you're not going to ever be rich. You'll get by. You know, you might have a new car every 5 years, 6 years. You might have a boat. You might even be able to save enough to get a summer home or a beach home or a mountain home or a mountain home or something, you know, for your retirement. You know, it's all well and good. You hope you get that. But this job brings more rewards than just financial rewards. We know that, or else we wouldn't be doing it. Going forward, I don't know what's going to happen. I see right now in New York, they can't fill the quota they need to replace the cops that have left and that are leaving in record numbers because people don't want to do this job anymore. There used to be a lot of veterans when I first came on in 1980. I worked with World War II and Korean and Vietnam War veterans. You know, I was a veteran. People I came on with, my whole class were veterans, 13 of us. It's going to change. It's not going to happen anymore. They talk about putting social workers with cops. Well, I am a social worker, and I was also a cop. I think it's a good idea when you need a social worker to come and help, but to go to a crime scene with a social worker, ludicrous. You got to watch out for that person. You got to watch out for yourself. You got to watch out for the people that are innocent bystanders, and now you got to watch out for the bad guy, a girl. You know, there's enough. There's a time and a place for everything. At a crime scene, a violent crime scene, it's not a place for a social worker to intervene and say, hey, let's talk, let's calm down. Let's talk about Maslow's theory of hierarchy. Let's, you know, talk to me for a minute. Just put down the claw hammer, put down the hatchet, put down the knife, put down the gun, put down the steak knife. You know, it's not going to happen. People are going to get killed. They have no weapons. I hope if they're going to put social workers with cops, they give them a vest and give them some pepper spray so they can protect themselves. Because the more than likely, I'd say the bad guy or girl is going to look at a social worker as somebody with law enforcement. They're not going to know who they are or even care who they are. Not at that heightened moment. No way. No way. And I hope it's thought out before they start giving social workers an opportunity to work with cops, because you're going to see some bad things happen. And you know what? It's bad enough going to a crime scene or a violent crime scene with four or five other cops. And then you get a social worker and you want to interject them into this. You know, when do they come in? You know, it's like waiting when you're playing jump rope. You know, when do you jump in? All right, here we go. All right, we're going to use you now. Get in there. No, it doesn't work that way. It's never going to work that way. After something's happened, you want to call a social worker to try to put things together and help them? Absolutely. I am a social worker. I have a master's degree in social work. You know what? If I had never done any law enforcement at all, and I knew there was a job available, I might be attracted to that idea without knowing what could happen to me. You know, they better tell them what could happen to them before any of these people take jobs like that, because it's a very dangerous position to put them in. Hope I'm not rambling here. You know, to me, there's nothing more important than helping somebody, a cop with an alcohol or drug problem, a correctional officer, a nurse, a doctor, excuse me, an EMS worker. I've helped them all, all right? I've helped homeless people that live under bridges. You know, I've helped every walk of life, male, female, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, Indian, Pakistani, Arabic. I helped them all. People from all over, from Ireland, people from France, people from Italy. You know, I've had a lot of clients in 21 years. And I got to tell you, I enjoy being able to help somebody find a piece of puzzle to put their life back in order. My life's far from perfect. I'm a very lucky man. I've been with the same woman for 40 years. I have three beautiful children, and God has been good to me. I'll tell you. And I did 35 years, 28 in the cruiser, eight of them working as an EAP, employee assistance professional. And even after I retired, I did another 3 years doing the EAP work, 3.5 years. So I know what it's about. But as I go into my elder years, I'm 67 now. I'm glad I have my degrees. I'm glad I have all my licenses because I still have the passion to help people. And it's what I do. I don't need a lot to be happy. A couple cigars, a good meal once in a while, and I have a wonderful family. That's where I spend all my time. I'm not someone who's running around, going all over the country, speaking and, you know, pat myself on the back. You know, I just think it's very, very, we're at a very critical time where we really have to look at each other and say, look, 5 years goes by very fast. You know, where am I going to be in 5 years? Is this job for me? You know, with all the negativity that's going on, you know, I can see why people are retiring. They're not waiting for 30 years, 32 years. They're going out in 20 years. Some people are going out earlier than that. They don't care about the retirement. They just want out. It's a very strenuous job. I know a lot of firefighters, you know, they feel the same way. Their life expectancy is very similar to a cop. They lose about 8 or 9 years than the average male, average white male, because they have a high stress job as well. You know, all of a sudden they got to go. They go from 0 to 60 in a snap of a finger. There's a fire. They got to put on 60 pounds of gear. They got to jump on a truck. They got to get to the scene. They got to make sure that they can hook up to a, nothing ever goes perfect. And they got to find a hydrant. They got to make sure that there's not a car in front of the hydrant. They got to make sure there are people, are the people in the building. They got to immediately go in, you know. Some firemen go in without any equipment on. They just get there and run in. Now I think it's protocol. They have to have their equipment. They have to go in with it. Years ago, firemen would just run in and they'd come running out with people, drag them out, carry them out. You know, they see a lot of horrific things, you know, deaths. People being injured, you know, it's just, it's a tough job, you know, and I think we should look as a society, when I say we should look at these jobs and these people that do them, and we should give them a lot more respect than what they're getting. Correctional officers, same thing. You don't know what goes on behind the walls. I only worked there for 14 months in a prison, but I've seen some horrific things, and it's a tough job. It really is. You know, the money's a lot better than it used to be. The benefits are much better, you know. So you firemen out there, you correctional officers, you police officers, you EMS workers, you nurses, you veterans. Don't forget the veterans, what they've seen and done, you know. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone. This cop line, 1-800-COP-LINE, which is a phone bank, 24/7, 365. All retired, 100 retired police officers, confidential. Confidentiality is key. You call them up if you're stressed, if you're thinking of hurting yourself, even if you're not, even if you're just depressed or anxious, give them a call. Excuse me. You know, there are people out there, there are resources out there for you. You know, you're not going to see it on a billboard, but I'm telling you, me, Mike Miles, the Podfather, I'm telling you, pick up the phone. My cell phone, 978-746-1717. Cop line, 1-800-COP-LINE. I don't have time to write out cop line and see what the see what the numbers are. You can do that. Hey, this is a new venture for myself and for Jersey Ed. And I'm hoping it's gonna work out. We're gonna keep it going for as long as we can. Don't be shy. Pick up the phone. My email, mikemilesmsw@gmail.com. That's Mike Miles, M as in Mike, S as in Sam, W as in whiskey, @gmail.com. mikemiles@msw@gmail.com. Email me, call me, 978-746-1717. We're here to help, you know, and believe me, we've gotten calls, we've gotten messages from all over the country, all the way up into Canada. The guest who gave us these shirts is from Canada, Montreal. And you know, we're here to help. That's what we're saying. Ed's doing all these different ventures with Friends in Recovery. He just went kayaking last week. I haven't seen him to talk about it. He sent me some nice pictures. Sounds like he had a great time. You know, you can't forget to have fun. Life's short. You just never know when it's going to be over. You know, you got to live each day like it could be the last day. You know, get up in the morning and try to enjoy the sunrise if you get a chance to see it. And if you don't, just breathe in the fresh air. Feel good about being alive. You know, we are in a virtual heaven living on this beautiful planet. You know what? It's a banquet. Most of us are starving. Life is a banquet, and most of us are starving. And I'd like to take the credit for that, but I can't. That was said by Helen Keller. And if you don't know who Helen Keller was, Google her. Because Helen Keller was blind, she was deaf, and she was mute. She couldn't speak from birth. They used to call deaf, dumb, and blind. Dumb meaning that she couldn't speak. Inappropriate today, but anyway. She said, life is a banquet and most of us are starving. This woman accomplished more in her life than most 10 people ever will. Now think of that. She couldn't hear, she couldn't see, and she couldn't speak. But she learned to communicate with Braille. She learned to communicate. She learned to be an author. She learned to be able to help people. Amazing woman, Helen Keller. And she loved life. She could never see a beautiful flower or a tree. She couldn't hear unbelievably incredible music, whatever your style is. And she couldn't speak. She couldn't tell you she loved you. Oh, yes and no. But she loved life. Now think of that. So we're very fortunate to be where we're at. I try to live a day at a time. I tell my children one day at a time. Sometimes it's difficult, but you don't stay sober for decades by living any other way. One day at a time, just take each day as it comes. Do the best you can. You can't worry about the past, it's over. And you can't even plan for the future because you know how things go, things change. This is the Podfather, Mike Miles. Feel free to contact me anytime, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Stay safe, everyone.
That concludes this episode of Answering the Call, the First Responders Podcast. Thanks to Genesis House for supporting those on the path to recovery and keeping this valuable resource free for all our friends in recovery. Follow us on Facebook for past shows and updates. And enjoy free access to twice daily support meetings. Brought to you by Genesis House and the Friends in Recovery.